What's up, everybody? This is Stephen A. Smith, host of the Stephen A. Smith Show podcast. Tune in every Monday, Wednesday, and Friday at the very least as I bring you all new episodes that feature the biggest headlines in the world of sports, pop culture, business, and I answer your phone calls and respond to your tweets. You'll hear my unfiltered opinions and straight-shooter interviews with top celebrities and game changers, all that and more. So listen to the Stephen A. Smith Show podcast on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
I'm Tamika D. Mallory.
And it's your boy, my son, the General.
And we are your hosts of TMI. And catch us every Wednesday on the Black Effect Network, breaking down social and civil rights issues, pop culture, and politics in hopes of pushing our culture forward to make the world a better place for generations to come. Listen to TMI on the Black Effect Podcast Network, iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
That's right.
I'm Hannah Storm, and my new podcast, NBA DNA with Hannah Storm, chronicles my 6 decades in professional basketball, from growing up in the sport to becoming one of sports TV's first female broadcasters. Join me as I dig deep into the game's history, unearth some wild stories, and talk to my friends from the world of basketball, from Dr. J to Charles Barkley. It's been a wild ride, and now I get to take you with me. Listen to NBA DNA with Hannah Storm on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Previously on Weedian House.
A roof is just never enough if you're not going to follow through and make sure that people are living with dignity inside these places. And it's just such a discrepancy of values, I think, to these politicians. It's good enough to have a roof over your head. And I think us on the ground, we're saying that, hey, this isn't playing out in any dignified sort of way.
Those of you who have resources, whether it's paper from an institution that allows you to infiltrate, to liberate, or whether you have more things than you need to keep your family safe, how about you radically redistribute those to those of us who have none? You got people laying on the street with nothing on them. They want us dead, relative. Homefulness is an emergency solution, and it can't happen without people working together.
Welcome back to Weedian House. I'm your host, Theo Henderson. First, a few shout-outs. A very big thank you to Anita from Ohio, who has listened to my most recent show, Blow the Whistle, and found it very compelling and informative. And to Sam Tracy from Homestart Incorporated, a Boston housing service agency. It is my sincere wish that more of our listeners all over the country tune in, subscribe, and if they so choose, be on the show. Last week's episode was so rich with information and detail that I felt it important to break up the episode to give our listeners a chance to take in the volume of information we received. This is the second helping, though this is not a cuisine I would recommend to take in one serving. Yet, you must take in the entire portion of a meal to reach the conclusion of this three-part series. So today, we are sharing part two of Blow the Whistle. So sit back and take it in. But first, let's talk unhoused news. Our first story, Federal District Judge Dolly G rules that unhoused children in desert camps need to be safe and in clean facilities. Judge G further states that the U.S. Customs Borders Protection should not hold minors in or direct them to open-air campsites, except for the amount of time it reasonably requires to prepare the minor to a more suitable facility. This was due to Customs Border Protections directing the children into these unsafe spaces. Next, in San Jose, California, unhoused encampments were banned near schools, and overnight RV parking will be limited. House children wrote to the mayor, Matt Mahan, claiming they were unable to walk to school past the tents and camps. Currently, there are around 4,411 unhoused residents in San Jose, California. This law will take effect in May 2024. In other news, private security has been endangering the unhoused community. Government, nonprofits, and businesses are increasingly hiring private guards to patrol shelters and areas around street encampment. In Southern California, the unhoused have sued over a range of alleged sexual abuses, from strip searches to sexual violence. In the Bay Area, contract workers were accused of dealing drugs and harassing the unhoused women. In Fresno and L.A., families have sued for wrongful death. In the first case, an unhoused person was killed by a security guard. In the second case, an unhoused resident was killed by another unhoused resident while the on-duty security officer did not act. Private security contracts have climbed 20%. Guards now outnumber sworn law enforcement officials roughly 4-1. Our next story takes us to Seattle. A driver ran over unhoused tents on a downtown sidewalk. On Tuesday, April 9th, 2024, a gray Acura SUV drove onto the curb and over the tents and then kept going. The police gave chase, but stopped when they found out the tents were abandoned. Then the driver came back, in which there was a shootout. However, the unhoused residents did not want to talk with law enforcement, and law enforcement were not able to obtain any of the bullet shells or casings from the shootout. The driver is still at large, and law enforcement officials were unable to get the name or the license plate number. Our last story brings us back to Los Angeles, where federal judge Dale S. Fisher wrote in an order that the city had not only altered, modified, and created documents to plaintiffs' claims, but it also had failed to produce legitimately requested documents. In essence, the city has falsified documentation dealing with the unhoused when they have swept encampments and taken their belongings. We, the unhoused, have been on site to many of these sweeps and have observed these many violations. The larger issue is, what is the consequence for causing this type of fraud with the city? It shows that the city is dangerously obfuscating the public, creating and maintaining the narrative that unhoused people are service resistant, unhoused people are criminals, they don't want any help, and most importantly, they are an eyesore when they have their own belongings to survive on the street. Los Angeles Mayor Karen Bass has recently given a press conference with her banged up airplane touting success. The reality is the plane is hurtling toward impending doom. We see a resistance to be audited, the cost of her immense failure, and the resistance to hearing from the impacted people who are dealing with houselessness. In conclusion, do any of the unhoused want to get on that broken airplane with Mayor Bass? And that's Unhoused News. When we come back, we'll listen to the second part of our interview with Danya Dominguez and DeAndre Beckham.
Like many of us, you might think identity theft will never happen to you. But consider this. There's a new identity theft victim every 3 seconds in the U.S. That's over 15 million people by the end of this year, equal to the populations of New York, Los Angeles, and Chicago combined. Even worse, identity theft victims often don't even know they're victims. That's why LifeLock Identity Theft Protection alerts you to identity threats, even the ones that don't show up on a credit report, like data breaches, fraudulent bank transactions, loan and credit card applications, and crimes committed in your name. If your identity is stolen, your own dedicated LifeLock U.S.-based restoration specialist will work to fix it. LifeLock protects you in ways that you simply can't on your own. Join now and save up to 25% your first year at LifeLock.com/news. That's LifeLock.com/news to save up to 25%. Identity theft protection starts here.
What's up, everybody? This is Stephen A. Smith. When I'm not at my day job, First Take, you can find me in my studio hosting the Stephen A. Smith Show podcast. Tune in every Monday, Wednesday, and Friday, at the very least, as I bring you all new episodes that feature the biggest headlines in the world of sports, pop culture, business, and politics.
You'll hear my unfiltered opinions on those nauseating Cowboy fans, the chaos in Washington, D.C., and trending topics on social media, as well as my straight shooter interviews with top celebrities and game changers. And I occasionally give out love advice. Yes, it's true. If you want to know my true feelings about something, I'll give it to you straight. So listen to the Stephen A. Smith Show podcast on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcast.
I'm Tamika D. Mallory.
And it's your boy, my son, the General.
And we are your hosts of TMI. New year, new name, new energy, but...
same old us. Oh,
yeah. And catch us every Wednesday on the Black Effect Network, breaking down social and civil rights issues, pop culture, and politics in hopes of pushing our culture forward to make the world a better place for generations to come. But that's not all. We will also have special guests to add their thoughts on the topics, as well as break down different political issues with local activists in their community. If you like to be informed and to expand your thoughts, listen to TMI on the Black Effect Podcast Network, iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
That's right.
Welcome back to We In House. I'm Theo Henderson. Without further ado, here's the second part of my interview with Project Home Key whistleblower Danya Ndiandre.
The narrative has to be controlled in a certain way because it's been conveyed for a long time to where people think like, oh, you're homeless. Like you were saying, like, oh, this is your fault. You're making this.
Yeah.
A lot of people aren't necessarily privy to a lot of the backstories that have happened to a lot of members.
Mm-hmm.
Not everybody's just, oh, I just don't want to do anything. I'm lazy. And that's just that I'd rather panhandle. A lot of these people come from very, very hard environments and they have a lot of terrible stories. There's a couple of members that I've actually encountered to where they had personal traumas that were tied into family and things that they experienced. And then you kind of look at it and just kind of like, you literally had no chance from the beginning. And then the sad part is a lot of people say like, oh, okay, we're going to give them these housing opportunities. And like you said, people hear housing and you think, oh, you have an apartment, you have a place. That's not necessarily the case.
Mm-hmm.
Sober livings, they could be cooped up in rooms and all types.
I'm in the SRO right now and that's driving me crazy because I don't have the movability because I have all of my belongings there, which is just driving me crazy. But that's part of the reality. And then that community bath thing or community showers. Or the landlord is a slumlord and you don't want to raise any ways because you don't have, you're on a tenuous kind of, on tenter hooks because you don't know if he's going to have a bad one or be on one and he throw you and everybody else out because he, you know, you expose, the mishandling or the incompetence that's going on. So it's definitely that the last episode I had is like, I had an unhoused woman tell me her struggles where her brother was killed and she was shot twice in the head. And that, and she was telling me it was difficult to try to come back from that. And, you know, because one, that's a violent thing that happened. Secondly, the emotional part of it. And thirdly, you know, she knew that she couldn't find suitable employment, be able to do that new reality. She probably would have been able to work and got some kind of, you know, assistance and things like that. But after being, you know, shot twice, you know, in the head, you know, and having those issues. And like she was saying, like, her left arm was paralyzed. She can't even move, you know, all of the other things. Like, for example, when I was stabbed out on the street, you know, I had several parts of my body removed internally. And, you know, that's a new reality. I feel every day there's not a day that goes by that I don't know or I'm reminded of how I was stabbed. It never goes away. It doesn't, if I turn a certain way, if I move or if I walk down the street or if I go to sleep, I'm always in the back of my mind thinking, well, remembering the wound and the missing parts that I have inside that's gone. They don't know, you know, those things are reality. And that's one of the things that really motivated me to really create this podcast, to really start to talk about it. Like, we've got to have equitable, but also accurate conversation. We cannot have house people just saying all these kind of crazy things about us, and that's the beginning and end. Well, we don't want help. You know, we're crazy. We're on drugs. You know, we just don't want to do anything with ourselves, or we're service resistant. Those things are conversation blockers in order for us to get to, as I said, get into the light of understanding. Understanding everyone's situation. No one decides, looks out the window. You know what? I want to be harassed today and live out on the street and live in the most worst kind of conditions. And because it's fun, it's just nothing to do. I do keep things spicy. It just doesn't happen. I don't care how how bad things are. Nobody wants to be living out in a displacement state of mind or the statement place of physicality.
Mm-hmm. And that's very important, too. So just like I said, again, just even hearing things that you've experienced, this platform is definitely necessary because a lot of people don't necessarily like have full details about what everybody experienced. And then I just personally believe it's a little bit kind of funny because as of late, like especially like during the pandemic and everything, everybody put the onus on like we need to pay attention to mental health. We need to pay attention to people's traumas. We need to understand what's going on socially and just everything from a structural level, like what's going on? Why are these things occurring? But when you start to kind of work in these systems and you have firsthand experience, especially like on the ground, you kind of notice that everybody tries to control the narrative and it's easier to dismiss everybody as a whole. Mm-hmm. And we are individually have these conversations and just be very avid and candid about it. Nobody knows. And so everybody else on the outside looking in operates under the assumption that, oh, people just want to be like this. Mm-hmm. Or they take the attitude, this is what I'm wasting my tax dollars on. And all this. It's not necessarily the case. A lot of people in here are working every day, not only just to get housing, but they're trying to survive. They're trying to deal with their traumas. They're trying to deal with their medical issues. And all of this is occurring at the same time. So just to have people on the outside looking in, kind of being dismissive of that, that's another narrative that like we need to change. Yeah. And also just people on a higher level. That's why I also think it's kind of important who gets appointed in certain positions because I personally feel like you have to have a close connection or an experience that's tied into this.
You know, we have actually like the director of operations from Illumination Foundation that was overseeing the Project Home Key site. She said this with her whole chest, but she said, I believe that the solution to homelessness is to put everybody that's unhoused on an island and let them like let them prove that they're willing to work for it. And that's how they get off the island and they get like access to all these services. I just sat there quiet because it was a bunch of us. But, you know, that sounds like eugenics to me.
Exactly. It is eugenics. They were trying that over in Florida, trying to put them near a sewage plant, put the unhoused out there. It's also like the when I did an episode where this guy wants all the unhoused to be put out in the desert, throw a water line and let them fend for themselves. Like this kind of purge idea that they got going on.
And these people just say that in open conversation, like not even hearing how extremely dehumanizing and just utterly horrible that is to say. And they're in positions of power, you know? So that's the frustrating thing for me. Like you come to your job, you come to work with that set of values, that mindset, and you're going to treat these people that way. And it's just, it almost feels like we're just there trying to protect them from that, you know, to kind of be like a buffer between the higher ups treating them like that, or like, again, advocating for them to have better services on site. But we get treated like we don't know what we're talking about. We get treated, we are patronized. We are infantilized about it. We get treated like we don't know what we're saying. Like, you know, even when I got dismissed, they're like, you must have known what you were doing, right? I'm like, yes, I knew I could lose my job for this. I did lose my job for this, but this is important, you know? Or them brushing it off as a non-issue that people are dying in here, you know? Again, it's where your values are where your values come from. You know, if you're okay with somebody dying in horrible situations under a roof, that tells me a lot about you. And that tells me you should not be in this field because you are not leading with humanity. You are not leading with being person-centered, and you are not leading with like you say, the light of understanding. You know, you're not trying to actually help these people. You are trying to coerce these people into fitting this norm of who deserves it and who doesn't, you know?
You know, every year that I do, I created this a couple of years ago when there was an unhoused person that passed away in the area I was in, and people just walked over the body. People didn't really take the time to give it the attention or respect that he was due. I created a memorial called Can You See Me? And I try to do it twice of the year, which is the next one is coming up in June. And hearing the unhoused that have passed away, I collect from all over, getting the names and putting them. I have a custom coffin where the sheet is over, where we put the names there. We put flowers. We create a service where we rehumanize the people that have passed away. And I wanted just to reach out to you, too, and let you know when the date of it is. If you can remember the names of them or the nicknames or things like that, we can put them on the list as well as, you know, remembering them.
Yeah,
that's definitely important and definitely would want to attend something like that because we can't ignore these realities. Mm-hmm. Now, I do understand that at a certain point, people are just like, I'm at capacity. I've heard a lot of terrible things and it's just a lot for me to just intake in and ingest before I break myself. But it is also important too, just to let people know that like, this is not an invisible matter. This is currently happening. So no, regardless of where you are at in the world, we have to pay attention to this. We have to really shine a light on it because it's just like how I look at it is that could be me. That could be anybody in my family. Friends, that could just be anybody that I don't even know. And it's just like, you just want to have that genuine empathy just for your fellow man, just that humanity. Because it's just like, how can you hear that these things are occurring and not feel no type of way to it? We don't have blood connections with any of our members or any of the people that are experiencing this, but just as somebody that just sees it happening, how can you just kind of turn your back, turn it to it and turn a blind eye? Like that's a moral issue at that point.
Or even just like excuse it, you know, by saying, hey, we got students, we got nursing students, we got HIA that goes every now and then, you know, it's fine. It's not fine. You know, we are asking for better for these people. We are asking for an actual like dignified place to live. And I think way to go if it so happens to be so, you know, and that's just not happening. And it's heartbreaking to see it. Like I said, we work where they live and they are a community, you know, and we get so close to them where they're through their ups and their downs. And it's been traumatizing to walk in on people who you cared for, you know, to walk in and find them cold, lifeless, you know, and to have known them in life, you know, and to just have poured all this work into them and into trying to be there for them and trying to get them out of the situation and just knowing that you have an uphill battle because of the systems that be, you know? And it's just, that's kind of why we're still doing this, you know, like people are asking me like, why are you still talking about this? I'm like, because people shouldn't be dying in the middle of Long Beach this way. It's utterly dystopian and it's so, so normalized that people don't even bat an eye about it, you know, but it's just, For a body to not be found for days and days in the middle of Long Beach, it's just not okay, you know? And it's nothing you say can excuse that. And I don't know how the mayor gets in front of the TV and says it's fine, even though at the very end he said, you know, we need help. Yes, we do. That's what we're saying. That's why we're still talking about it, you know, because we do need help. We need these structures to be better. We're actually on the same side if you'd be willing to look at your own values and question your own values and see that you wouldn't want your own relatives to go through this. It should not be okay for anybody else to go through this, you know?
I agree.
It's just like, we got dismissed and I got fired and just for even like bringing these issues up and just to even see that you're going to open up another building without necessarily taking care of the one that we came from and just knowing that other places are experiencing this, it's just like, everybody can just kind of pick up and be like, okay, we can kind of play hot potato with accountability and ultimately nobody wants to address what's going on. So then when you go create another PHK or another opportunity like that, who's to say, how are you going to open this up and you haven't even fixed this yet? Granted, we do want to have people off the streets, but we need to make sure that the new facilities is just as well as the old facilities, that things are at a standard to keep people alive, people to get the resources that they need. Honestly, I'm tired of a lot of it because a lot of people just necessarily like don't care. They carry on business as usual. And it was very telling to me, Diane, and a lot of other staff members too, that we have people that claim that they want to advocate, they want to help. But you have these supervisors, you have these higher ups come into the building. They don't even look the members in the eye. we had to, you, the crazy part about it is too, is we literally had to invite them to the very site that they say that they care about as far as like these clients. And it took them a while to come.
And that's one of the things, like right before I got dismissed, I met with somebody from the city who was coming in to help us. You know, after Illumination Foundation left, there was just me and another case manager. And I asked them, hey, like, it's been since last March that you all like informed the site that it's going to turn into permanent supportive housing. And for a year now, the members have been freaking out about where they're going to go when that happens, you know, and nobody has shown their face for an entire year to tell them what's going to happen. They come to us, we didn't get informed, and we have to just basically be like, hey, like, trust that it's going to be fine. I don't tell them that. I tell them from my own experience from closing the first Project Room Key site, they're going to offer you safe parking or they're going to offer you congregate shelter. And we need to get you out of here if you have a voucher, because I do not trust the city to put you in a better place than this. Right. So that's me trying to make sure that they don't get their hopes up. Mm-hmm. But also I finally told them like a few weeks ago, you know, like, please come to the site, please have a town hall with the members and tell them what the plan is, because it's long overdue. It's been a year and they've been in limbo for a year without any answers, you know? So it's also that lack of accountability towards the very people that you're serving, you know? Nobody goes down there to ask their opinions about anything. Nobody goes to look at the rooms and the state that they're in. There's mold in there. Like I said, bed bugs, cockroaches, completely infested. And nobody is directly talking to them. Nobody's talking to us, you know? When the CEOs came, DeAndre told them to take a tour of the place and they wouldn't do it, you know? So what does that say? You know, it's just completely inhumane and lack of accountability.
Yeah, I agree. And I thank you guys again for taking the time to talk to me.
Thank you, Theo. We appreciate your
time. Thank you so much.
Thank you so much to Danya and DeAndre for sharing their experiences and blowing the whistle here on Weedian House. When we come back from break, we're going to take a different direction. Our next guest tells us about her current experiences of houselessness.
What's up, everybody? This is Stephen A. Smith. When I'm not at my day job, First Take, you can find me in my studio hosting the Stephen A. Smith Show podcast. Tune in every Monday, Wednesday, and Friday, at the very least, as I bring you all new episodes that feature the biggest headlines in the world of sports, pop culture, business, and politics. You'll hear my unfiltered opinions on those nauseating Cowboy fans, the chaos in Washington, D.C., and trending topics on social media, as well as my straight shooter interviews with top celebrities and game changers. And I occasionally give out love advice. Yes, it's true. If you want to know my true feelings about something, I'll give it to you straight. So listen to the Stephen A. Smith Show podcast on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcast.
I'm Hannah Storm, and my podcast, NBA DNA with Hannah Storm, digs deep into the history of professional basketball, along with my own as one of the first female sportscasters.
Now let's get you up to speed on what else happened around the NBA today.
We talked to all sorts of people I interacted with, from Dr. J to Charles Barkley, and recap iconic moments.
Yes, he's got it. Here he comes. Ray rocked the baby to sleep and slam dunk.
As well as some of the wild stories behind the scenes.
We were like, what? What are we in for? The scoreboard crashes before we even tip a game off.
Today, the NBA is a global sports and entertainment giant. Players are multimillionaires and cultural icons.
Iguodala to Curry, back to Iguodala, up for the layup. Oh, blocked by James! LeBron James!
And these stories are about how we got here, both on and off the court. And what's next? Listen to NBA DNA with Hannah Storm on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
I'm Tamika D. Mallory.
And it's your boy, my son, the General.
And we are your hosts of TMI. New year, new name, new energy, but...
same old us. Oh, yeah.
And catch us every Wednesday on the Black Effect Network, breaking down social and civil rights issues, pop culture, and politics in hopes of pushing our culture forward to make the world a better place for generations to come. But that's not all. We will also have special guests to add their thoughts on the topics, as well as break down different political issues with local activists in their community. If you like to be informed and to expand your thoughts, listen to TMI on the Black Effect Podcast Network, iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
That's right.
Welcome back to Woody and House. My final guest today is going to discuss her experiences being unhoused and studying journalism. Here's my interview with Janet.
I'm Janet. I'm a journalism student at LACC. I am currently unhoused, staying in my SUV. Former organizer with the LA Tenants Union, helped create the Rapid Eviction Defense Program, and currently just focused on trying to get through school.
Which I'm glad you mentioned that, because it is not a surprise that there are various facets of houselessness. For example, there are unhoused that we always see with the encampments. We see some living in hotels. We see some doing produce. We're seeing various diversity of houselessness. And I must ask, how long have you been unhoused?
I guess technically only about 2 months.
What brought it on? What happened? If you don't mind us talking on this.
Yeah. So, basically, when I split with my partner last year, I started staying in my Prius. And then when I got back from Florida, I went to Florida to work. And I realized that if I was going to head back to LA, that I wouldn't be able to afford the rent out here. They want first month and last month and your firstborn child and everything else. And I just knew it was going to be impossible if I wanted to focus on school full time, that I wouldn't be able to actually be able to pay rent. So I actually got myself a decent SUV so that I can stay in it, you know, rather comfortably, and that's my kind of main expense. So that's kind of my rent payment instead of a rent payment, because it's about half of what that would be.
Quick question. In San Jose, California, they are utilizing technology companies that are using AI technologies to find unhoused people, and particularly people that are living in RVs or vehicles. And it portends for something very sinister, even though they're claiming they're not taking pictures of people, but they're taking of their vehicles. Would that be a concern? Do you think that's going to spread? Or what's your thoughts on this? Because now that you are living in your vehicle, is this a consideration that you would really think on?
I mean, it's a huge concern. I think a lot of folks are starting to discover this lifestyle out of necessity. And, you know, I think that they're, you know, they've always been trying to criminalize homelessness. It's just a larger reach now with people staying in their vehicles, because we can kind of stay under the radar at the moment. But I think that they want to, you know, they want to force us into programs. They want to force us into getting arrested and being in jail, and then, you know, essentially working for them as slaves in the jail system. They really don't want us to find ways out of the system that they've built. So yeah, it's a huge concern.
I also want to take a quick change of topic and ask of you, what was it like for your first time being unhoused?
You know, I think the hardest thing has been, not knowing if I'm safe at night. So I think the first several nights it was, you know, is someone going to find that I'm in my vehicle? Is someone going to call the police on me? Is there going to be a guy that finds me and tries to take advantage? I think it took a few weeks for me to get more comfortable with it. Now I sleep like a baby, but for a long time I didn't.
How long did it take to find a safe place to find where you could park? Because I noticed that some friends that were using vehicles, that could be very touchy, because the neighbors could be NIMBY-ish, or they right. called the cops, or you get your car towed. So you have to be very careful where you park it.
Yes, exactly. I actually use an app called iOverlander. Highly recommend it for anyone that's just getting into their car. It's a great app that shows you a lot of places that you can stay overnight with reviews from people who've done so. And I also use different Facebook groups with unhoused people to ask, you know, what's safe and what's not, and get ideas from that. So, you know, I've actually found some really great spots where I don't worry as much. And I try to keep an eye out for people that I can see are also staying in their cars. And if they're doing it, I feel a little bit more comfortable me doing it as well.
How is it juggling going to school and being unhoused as well?
Oh, it's difficult for sure. I think the hardest thing is finding a place to study and also finding a place that I can really relax and like just take some time to be by myself. Kind of the lack of privacy is really difficult. So I find myself being just kind of drained and tired all the time. So all the things that I would like to be doing in school and extracurricular activities, I'm not really doing as much as I had hoped, just because I'm just exhausted. I think like the basic finding a place to shower, finding a place to work, finding a place to walk my dog, like all those things, it's kind of difficult to get into a routine. And I think that that's, you know, all the things that you kind of take for granted when you're in a house, all those things just add up and are a lot more difficult and take a lot more time.
Let me ask the dreaded question, because I had a hard time with this, not only with finding places to shower, is the laundry, because L.A. is not meant for walking. And some of the place laundry places are a far from place, or, you know, so are you having challenges with this?
I do OK with laundry because with my car, you know, it's easier for me to, you know, store my laundry there. I'm actually helping out a friend who lets me stay with them on occasion, and I am able to take them to do their laundry because they don't have a car. So I feel like I can at least be useful in that way. But yeah, the laundry hasn't been a challenge as much as just kind of having stinky laundry in your car is not preferable.
Yes, especially you have to sleep in the same, you know, and heat coming up.
Right.
And so yeah, you have to, it's one of the things like to really stay on top of, or particularly like after we had a rainstorm, it was one of the difficult things because clothes start to mildew and you want to be around people being offensive. So
yeah,
it's one of those catch-22s. You've sent me something, and I'm going to take a quick minute on to ask you something because we're talking about houselessness. You said 20% of California community college students are houseless, and 60% have experienced some kind of housing insecurity. And you, of course, needless to say, this is a crisis. So you want to amplify your conversational point with this?
Yeah, it's actually something that I just learned and made me feel you know, you shouldn't feel guilty for being unhoused when the system isn't there to serve us. But, you know, you kind of feel like, oh, there's something wrong with me if everyone else can kind of figure out how to make this happen. But it turns out they can't. I mean, for 1 in 5 college students or community college students to be unhoused, kind of a shocking statistic. But it also doesn't surprise me given how much work we have to put in for school. How can we, I mean, there's only so many hours in the week. Mm-hmm. How can we also work a full-time job? It doesn't seem like there's enough resources built around this.
And being unhoused is a full-time job, despite people not understanding that. Yeah. So, yes, that's one of the things that's a very interesting point. Do you know of any of your classmates that are unhoused, or are you guys like what I would do, like play the role that like I'm just a student coming with my books? And like when I was speaking over at UCLA, a couple of the students came to me after me having a conversation and told me that they were unhoused. And one, you know, mentioned it in the class, and I could see the shock on classmates' faces because of, again, only people see unhoused that are on outside on encampments or an RV. They don't understand that they have classmates that are either working next to them or in the same kind of predicament. So I found that very unique. But also you mentioned here, and I'm going to take a minute here about when you were tenant organizing, what got you involved into the tenants union?
Well, I had moved here at the beginning of the pandemic, and I didn't realize the level of the crisis that was happening all across the city, seeing people get evicted during the eviction moratorium. And I had really come to LA during the pandemic to be of use. I had a group of organizers that we all came off of the Bernie Sanders campaign and realized that, you know, electoral politics was not going to be the answer. And we decided to all come together to LA from all across the country to be as useful as we could. And I found the LA Tenants Union and started organizing with them and, you know, went to a lot of eviction defenses and saw just the crazy over-the-top reaction from landlords when tenants couldn't pay rent, which of course they couldn't. There was no way to work. How can you not go to work and not pay your rent? It's just impossible. So yeah, I started organizing with them, and I think that actually led me to starting to try to find ways to stay in my car, because I knew that, you know, one bad thing happens and you're going to be unhoused. It just happens so quickly here. So I started watching a lot of YouTube videos and researching, you know, how do you make it how do you make it work in your car? And I did my research for even a couple of years before I made the move.
You mentioned about you wanted shining the light on the evils of the system. But you also mentioned you started protesting and getting involved with mutual aid and eviction defense and Stop the Sweeps. And you guys didn't know where to go with the anger. So can you explain that?
Yeah, I think in 2020, it was like a big wake up call for everyone to see that the system really and truly does not care about us. You know, to see so many people struggle to make ends meet because they literally could not work. There was no way to work with everything shut down. And to see the way that other countries went about it, most countries knew how to take care of people and make sure that they didn't have to go to work. And ours, for some reason, didn't, even though we're the wealthiest country in the world. So I think a lot of people, you know, had extra time on their hands and were growing angrier and angrier. And, you know, they found outlets for that through the protest movement when George Floyd was murdered, Breonna Taylor, and, you know, countless others, Andres Guardado here in L.A. And I think that we channeled a lot of that anger into those protests and supporting each other through mutual aid and eviction defense. And I'm really proud of the work that I did with all of those. But I think coming out of 2020 and seeing that, you know, the needle hasn't really moved, and in fact, things have gotten worse, it just, to me, really highlighted how we can't rely on just doing, you know, one aspect of these things, and that's going to actually really make a difference, that we need to start to connect the dots across the country from different, you know, protest movements, mutual aid movements, and to be able to see, like, this is what's working over here, and we need to be able to adjust that for the situation that we have over here. And if we're not learning from each other, we're just wasting, you know, valuable time.
In your estimation, you mentioned things are getting worse. How so are they getting worse? In your, what do you think is going on that it shows that it's getting worse? Of course, I agree with you, but yeah. I wanted to get your insight on it.
You know, to see how much the rents have gone up, it seems to be no cap on increases in rent, increases in grocery prices. I mean, everyone is feeling the squeeze. You know, even the middle class is feeling the squeeze. And, you know, to see that our president can send bombs over to murder Palestinians in mass and ethnic cleansing, and to see that and know how much money is being spent on it, and know that that's our money that's being, that's our labor that's being stolen from us, and our tax money that's being stolen from us, and it's not being used to be helpful here. It just seems like, it seems like things really couldn't get any worse, and yet I think that they will, until we actually start fighting back, because they're going to push us as far as they can.
Well, they're already planning cop cities and other things, because I think they have a foresight and understanding. There's only so much that they're going to keep blaming the and impoverished for their condition. Right now, there's many people believing in the Horatio Alger myth that is a personal failing and right. of being unhoused, or people are doing survival or survival crimes or quality of life crimes, and they're trying to keep that going as long as they can. Turning to a different direction, I wanted to also ask you, do you plan on finding, getting a house, or are you going to stay in the automobile, or are you going to, what would be a better way to help you?
I think the plan right now is to stay in my car until I'm able to save up enough money to actually buy a place, because I don't want to keep throwing away money on rent. I don't want a tyrant landlord to feel like they can come into my home whenever they want to and not fix anything and keep asking for more and more money. So I, ideally, I won't be paying rent anymore ever again. So I'm thinking it might be the next 5 years or so that I save up and buy a place.
Is there anything that I missed in asking of questions, like you can want to jump in and talk about?
You know, I think the biggest thing that is keeping people from organizing that I've noticed is the propaganda of, like you said before, people believe that it's like an individual failing. And I think that's, you know, very much on purpose that corporate media tries to convince us that this is just, oh, it's just a mental health issue. It's just a drug addiction issue. And it's like, no, everyone is struggling, and it can't be everyone's fault. That's impossible. You know, it's the system that we're in. And until we start to see, I think, stories of people that are fighting back in a beautiful way and working together as a community to make larger changes and not be on the defense, but start to take the offense. I think, you know, the reason I got into journalism is because I want to be able to, I want to be able to tell those stories and show people that there is a different way, and that, you know, there are people out there that are really making a change, and you don't have to see the news and be in despair. You can see what's happening and be hopeful and be uplifted, because there are people that are making meaningful change.
Well, do you think mainstream media has that kind of connection, or
They don't want to. It's very much their focus is trying to convince us that it's our fault, mm-hmm. and that, you know, if we just worked a little harder, hustle culture, then we can be a famous, rich celebrity as well. Luckily, we have social media that shows us what's actually happening, because the corporate media never will. But I think that we can grow that as community organizers. We can grow our own mass media that really is done by and for the people.
Excellent. I agree. When I created Woody and Howell's Living on the Street, that was my whole aim, to show the reality. Our news medias always love to find the worst of unhoused people to justify the most inhumane kind of policies. But I digress, and I know, and I'm sure I'm speaking to the choir. How do you suppose we could turn this around?
You know, I think, like I said, I think really positive and uplifting media showing what we're able to accomplish as, you know, regular working class and poor people. I think, you know, finally saying enough is enough, and not paying rent to the landlord that doesn't fix anything, you know, not allowing your boss to treat you like crap and not unionize. Like, if we all start working together, these things can change. And yeah, we have to get outside of that individualist mindset.
Well, you know, that's how capitalism is able to thrive, because they have that individual achievement and ability. I think this is one of the very interesting conversations to have. And I thank you for showing up and coming in with some things to talk about.
Thank you for having me.
Thank you to Janet and to all of the guests who have taken the time to share their stories. If you would like to share your story on Weedy and House, please reach out to me at weedyandhouse.com, at Weedy and House on Instagram, or email me at weedyandhouse@gmail.com. Tune in next time for our final installment of Blow the Whistle. Again, thank you all for taking time to listen, and may we again meet in the light of understanding. Weedy and House is a production of iHeartRadio. It is written, hosted, and created by me, Theo Henderson. Our producers, J.B. Loftus, Haley Fager, Katie Fischel, and Lyra Smith. Our editor is Adam Wand, and our logo art is also by Katie Fischel. Thanks for listening.
What's up, everybody? This is Stephen A. Smith, host of the Stephen A. Smith Show podcast. Tune in every Monday, Wednesday, and Friday at the very least as I bring you all new episodes that feature the biggest headlines in the world of sports, pop culture, business, and I answer your phone calls and respond to your tweets. You'll hear my unfiltered opinions and straight-shooter interviews with top celebrities and game changers, all that and more. So listen to the Stephen A. Smith Show podcast on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
I'm Hannah Storm, and my new podcast, NBA DNA with Hannah Storm, chronicles my 6 decades in professional basketball, from growing up in the sport to becoming one of sports TV's first female broadcasters. Join me as I dig deep into the game's history, unearth some wild stories, and talk to my friends from the world of basketball, from Dr. J to Charles Barkley. It's been a wild ride, and now I get to take you with me. Listen to NBA DNA with Hannah Storm on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
I'm Tamika D. Mallory.
And it's your boy, my son, the General.
And we are your hosts of TMI. And catch us every Wednesday on the Black Effect Network, breaking down social and civil rights issues, pop culture, and politics, in hopes of pushing our culture forward to make the world a better place for generations to come. Listen to TMI on the Black Effect Podcast Network, iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
That's right.